Congressman Mike Bost represents an expansive portion of Southern Illinois in the U.S. House of Representatives. And now he's facing a stiff challenge for re-election from St. Clair State's attorney, Brendan Kelly. The Republican from Murfreesboro joins us on the latest edition of Politically Speaking to break down how he'll win a third term and how his district has become more red over time. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking Podcast, a candid conversation with the Show Me State's biggest political newsmakers.
I'm Jason Mirzenbaum.
And I'm Joe Manish.
Elections should be about your accomplishments. What have you done to qualify you for the position, and why are you qualified to run?
I'm going to push back on these regulators.
I'm doing this for the people.
I was encouraged along the way, not just by my family, but by a lot of teachers and professors, and knew when I was in college that I would run for office someday.
We're very excited about the prospect of having some more free market solutions.
Even though after the conversation, I still might not agree.
We want our listeners to get a real sense of what drives these people.
They're actually people with a story to tell.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, brought to you by Lufu's Alfa Romeo, offering test drives of the Alfa Romeo Giulia, the 2018 Motor Trend Car of the Year at Lufu's Alfa Romeo in Fairview Heights.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Jason Mirzenbaum, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in studio today is
colleague Joe Manish
and the representative of Illinois' 12th Congressional District, the most competitive congressional district in the universe, apparently.
Apparently.
Well, at least in the Illinois.
Yeah. We have as our guest today
Mike Bost.
And I'm really excited for this show, just as I was excited for the Brendan Kelly show. I've covered this race 3 out of the last 4 election cycles. I do believe this is one of the most exciting and compelling congressional contests in the entire country. And part of the reason is both of the candidates, I feel, are really, really strong and have really compelling stories to tell. So that might be damning you with faint praise.
But it is a race that has been noticed around the nation. The Democrat, Nancy Pelosi, sees it as a pathway to her speakership. Republicans see it as a competitive race, and they need to make their investment and knew that off the start. It is not the first competitive race I've been in.
Which we'll talk about in a minute.
Okay.
In fact, that's exactly what we wanted to talk to you about. Since we have not had you on the show before, we do want to give you a chance to tell us a little bit about yourself and your political biography, because it's very, very interesting in many respects.
Well, let me tell you that I was born and raised right there in Murfreesboro, Illinois, except for the 3 years I served in the United States Marine Corps. My background, I went to the Marine Corps, was an electronics specialist there, came back home, started running and managing the family trucking business. I jokingly say to people I ran that for 10 years. I loved it for 8. My brother now runs it. It was a family business started by my grandfather in 1933, so it was a family business. My wife and I also then went into we actually own a beauty salon, and I don't do hair. I actually fold a lot of towels and used to do books, but now my daughter's involved and she does those for them. That being said, I got involved in politics early in life after coming home from the Marine Corps. I'm young and married early and had 2 children at a very young age, and I was running the family business, and I saw some things happening at the local level, was not happy with them. I got a little upset, and my wife walked into the family room and looked at me and says, "What's wrong?" And I told her what was going on in the paper, and she said, "Well," and she hates to hear this story, but it's true. That's what she said. She said, "Either shut up or get involved." And she didn't know what to level over the years I would be involved. So right after that, I had to decide whether I was Republican or Democrat. And I tell youth whenever I'm talking with them in schools and high schools and around and colleges that I went to this thing called the library because we didn't have the internet back then. And I actually read the platform of then Ronald Reagan and the Republican Party and Walter Mondale and the Democrat Party. And though I had friends that told me you couldn't be elected in that area unless you were a Democrat, I knew that my ideas and my beliefs were Republican, and I ran on a Republican ticket for county board.
And that's going to be a theme we talk about throughout this show. Southern Illinois, particularly the part that you represent now, is a traditionally Democratic area. The 12th District, which kind of stretches from the Metro East down all the way to, I think, the Missouri-Kentucky border, was a Democratic district for like 40 or 50 years.
Yeah, basically. But they were Blue Dog Democrats.
Blue Dog Democrats.
Yeah, that's vitally important to understand. When I first ran in one of the counties, Union County, as a state rep, it was vitally important that I went knocked on the door. As they opened the door, I stuck my foot in the door and I said, "Hi, I'm Mike Bost. I'm running for state representative." And they would say Republican or Democrat, and I'd go Republican. They'd try to shut the door. My foot was already in. And I said, "Hear me out. I'm pro-life. I believe very strongly in the Second Amendment. I believe less government is better, and I believe local control is better. And many of them would go, well, you believe like I do. And I said, yeah, but I'm a Democrat. Right. Why are you a Democrat? And here's what they'd say. Mom and Dad were, or my unions told me I need to be. And I could say, I'm a union firefighter. My grandparents, or my grandfather on my mother's side, are all union coal miners. I understand the importance of unions. That, over the years, has made it to where, you know, the idea of a representative form of government is just that. You represent the people, and if you can represent the people and not necessarily the party, at times I have to fight against my own party, you know, that understanding unions is not exactly what most Republicans are known for. So it kind of causes a little bit of conflict, but they understand who I am. There's several of us that are from union areas and know, understand why it is that bargaining agreements are made, held, and held up on.
So, for example, you're opposed to right to work.
I am.
Which would bar unions and employers from requiring workers to pay dues as a condition of employment. Right. Huge issue in Missouri, not so much in Illinois.
It's an issue in Illinois, too. Yeah. Because we're the only state left that isn't made that decision. I was one of the first ones to come out and speak while I thought the Janus decision was wrong. Because let me tell you that when, and it kind of shocked a few people, I guess, but it didn't shock the people who knew me.
Well, explain our listeners
what the Janus. Basically, in the state of Illinois, there was a suit filed that claimed that a person should not have to be required to be part of the union as far as a state worker is concerned. And the argument for that was we were a fair share state, and you could take a fair share payment, which means that you still paid for being a union member, but there was a section that went to politics and right. It would be removed. And I said, because it was set up that way, I didn't think the Supreme Court was right in their call. Now, I don't make the call for them, thank heaven, we have those separations, and that's fine. But the problem that exists is that when you are a member of a organized labor group, whether it's state, federal, or whatever, or local, you get if you're going to get the benefits of them. They will negotiate on your behalf if there is a grievance. They will also then argue for your behalf for whatever your pay increase might be or benefit increase might be. So therefore, they're providing a service. And as long as, you know, but if they are supporting somebody politically you don't support, then pull your money out of the PAC side. That's what we were able to do. But according to the way the ruling went down, that's not the case. And so it's a little tough.
So just to get to summarize some of your political experience, you were in the Illinois House of Representatives from, I think, 1995.
20 years.
To, I think, 2015.
Mm-hmm. I went in during the time of the Newt wave. Served, and my district was always a targeted district, well, for the first several years. Then I became a member of the Republican leadership, was actually a floor leader, and then ran for Congress 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever a point in time where you were in the majority in the Illinois House?
Yes, the first 2 years.
Yes, that was the only time in my entire lifetime that Michael Madigan has not been Speaker of the
House. That's right. Mike Madigan has been Speaker for 36 years with a hiatus in 1995 and 96, and that was the year that I came in as a freshman, and that was the time we did welfare reform in the state of Illinois that then Bill Clinton picked up and moved to the national level. We also did some major tort legislation at the time to try to encourage business growth. We were operating the budget and paying on bills on 28-day pay cycle.
So, and this is kind of going to transition into what you're doing now.
Yeah.
So it's an inverse situation in Missouri where Democrats are like deep in the minority, whereas in Illinois, Republicans have been, you know, deep in the minority in various capacities for a long time. How has it been to go into a situation where famously you got very upset about mm-hmm. the situation, probably to your benefit when the DCCC ran those ads showing right. that aforementioned speech, to a point where you're actually in Congress, you've been in the majority the whole time, and you can actually do things rather than rail against people.
That's just it. It is the ability to grab legislation that you can see that is good, that can make things better for your children and grandchildren. And you can see that and move forward. And it's not just children and grandchildren per se. I'm blessed in the committees that I'm on. I'm on transportation and infrastructure, which is vitally important to not only my district, but the nation. And then I'm on ag, which is with my district, that's vitally important as well. But the Veterans Affairs Committee is a humbling experience for me, and especially being the chairman of the Disability and Memorial Affairs Committee, which deals with those who have a disability, have been disabled through their time in service. They can have an appeals process. We modified that. We were able to get those modifications done in a bipartisan manner to move forward with that language and then actually speed up the process by which we could actually allow our veterans to receive their benefits. Also with that committee is we have every memorial and gravesite in the world is under that committee, which is humbling in itself.
So what do you see if someone asks you why you should be reelected? What do you see as one of your top accomplishments? I mean, you were talking about various things that have been going on, but what do you see as your top accomplishment as you make this bid for another term?
Yeah, there's several top accomplishments, and one I just mentioned was the fact of revamping the disability system so that it can react faster. When we start talking about ag, I've been working on the ag bill, and my involvement with that and the learning curve went straight up because you've got to understand that that the bill that is the farm bill is just that. It is 50% farm bill. The other 50% is the SNAP programs. There's welfare reform that we put in there, not anything that jerks the rug out from under anybody. It is an actually opportunity for people to go back to work at a time when one of the major accomplishments we've had over the last couple of years is, or last year and a half, is the tax reform bill. The tax reform bill, you know, they can you can criticize, but it has stimulated the economy. It is a great benefit to a majority, a mass majority of the people. It has not been done since, the last time they done it, the last time it was done, I was running for county board, and I had a mullet, and my wife told me it looked good. So that's how long ago.
And a mustache.
I did have a mustache. Yeah, I did. Up until until I was 44 years old, I had a mustache. But so the accomplishments there, the economic growth, all of the things we're seeing is some of the things that I can hang my hat on and that we need to keep driving down.
Now, with the tax cuts, however, I mean, there's been a lot of news lately about the increased deficits, at least in the short term, and the possible addition to the debt. How do you respond to that? There's been speculation on what Congress might need to do next year. I'm interested in your take on that.
I want you to look at those numbers where they said off the start, you know, we're going to see an increase in deficit. Actually, because we're seeing for the first, where the new norm was supposed to be 1.9% GDP growth, we're up over 4. That in itself will be able to stimulate, like it did during Bill Clinton era and Newt Gingrich era, a growth that actually allows us to quickly move towards a balanced budget. You can try to tax your way out of a situation, which Illinois has tried to do. You can see how that worked. Or you can try to grow your way out. What we were able to do with the tax cut bill is do just that. We see our biggest problem right now, whenever I'm talking to people in business, are I'm expanding, I'm wanting to expand, I can't find enough employees. So then we have to start working on educating and training new employees for the jobs that are out there. But that is whenever you hear the people that say, oh, no, we're going to have an increase in deficit. The reality is that by growing the economy, that deficit then is reduced.
I want to talk about an issue that's very big in your district. That's the steel and aluminum tariffs. Because if I'm not mistaken, Granite City Works is in the 12th District.
It is. It's my district.
Beautiful Granite City, Illinois.
Yeah, Jason and I were both there when the president visited.
And I asked this to Brendan Kelly because I sense that the tariffs will end up helping a place like Granite City Works in the long run.
They helped them in the short run.
Yeah, in the short run and in the long run because there may be more domestic steel production that happens there. But you talk to agriculture groups in Missouri, and they are apoplectic about this. They're scared.
And let me clarify that because they're scared. But let me also say this. I've worked side by side with my ag, because I told you I was on ag committee. We've worked side by side to see what their problems are. If you notice, one thing that has come about, the agreement with Mexico, which will probably force Canada back to the table. Now, Canada wants to hold on to their dairy situation, and that's where the real negotiation is. But the problem is they can't see drawing out of the deal at the loss over the dairy when they know for a fact they've got to be in the deal. And it's a really good deal for a negotiation that way. The EU has now come on board, and they're buying soybeans for the first time in 15 years. So, but this still boils down to we've got to drive China away from this situation where they're cheating all the time. So, my ag people, we sit with them, we talk, we deliver the message that they need to the administration, whether it's on how the importance is with Japan to go ahead and get that market and open up for our pork producers, to make sure that we got the EU opened up to soybean to try to get that direction working in the right direction. So they're scared, they're worried, because that's what farmers, you know, God bless them, they worry about the rain, they worry about the dry, they worry, and so they're going to worry about this. But working with them, understand this. They understand that I'm working for them. I got their endorsement through the Farm Bureau and the Activator Award, and that's because I've worked with them side by side.
Now, I mean, I was just talking to a farmer a few days ago who's telling me, he's a soybean farmer, that he's facing losses of $500,000 this year.
Yeah, that is a possibility if we don't straighten a few things out. And it's a double reason, too. The main reason is that if the markets were at the price that they were before— That is one thing. And remember, markets have reaction. They don't necessarily show truth. So we've got to try to get this straightened out as quick as possible. And our soybean farmers, as well as our corn growers, they're bringing in record crops. Well, record crops are usually a good thing, but they're not a good thing for the overall market, because then you have to drop down. So what we also have to remember on soybeans is China has to have their soybeans. Now, the markets are jerking back and forth because of China's reaction, but they have to have soybeans. They have to have it for their hogs, they have to have it for their chickens, and they have to have it for what they do as food product production. That being said, they've got to buy it from somewhere. They got Argentina and Brazil. Argentina is in a drought. So somewhere they're going to have those. Now, if they have to cycle them through somewhere else, that's fine, but we're going to have to sell those soybeans. But right now, those farmers are concerned, because if they go at the market they're at right now, yes, they can take that loss.
I want to talk about the president, because let's just say the DCCC, if they ran an ad saying Mike Bost votes with Donald Trump 97% of the time and tried to use that as a derisive attack against you, like they're doing with Peter Roskam on the 6th District, you probably would be jumping for joy, because that would likely help you more than it would hurt.
Yeah, and then I'd look and analyze which votes are with them, and then understand this, because I'm going to vote my district first. Mm-hmm. It is that my district would most probably be with him.
I want you to explain how you think he's doing. How do you think people are in the 12th district react to him, and also places where you think that he's fallen short? Because I think that he's been criticized more than many chief executives in recent history, and some of it's been warranted.
Some of it's warranted. You know what? I wouldn't tweet like that, and the amount of constituents that I have come up saying, can you talk to him and say, don't do that? I said, I don't know if you know it or not, but he doesn't call me at 3 o'clock in the morning before he tweets.
That's a shocker.
I know. And so, you know, the reality is I have to look at the good things that are happening under his watch, the tax reforms, the economic growth, all of these things. Do I have fear also on the tariffs as well as how it helps? Yeah, because, you know, you don't know. But remember, he's different than any other president we've ever had. Is that a good thing or is a bad thing? It's a different thing. And the reality is that if we sit down and talk with him like we should with any other president, you know, the thing is, I didn't agree with the former president always. He and I served together in the Illinois General Assembly.
Yep.
Played cards with him. Now, but if we wanted to talk, we'd talk, and sometimes I'd agree, sometimes I'd disagree. Same thing with this president. I happen to agree with him more on wanting to make sure the economy is stimulated, that we make sure we do everything we can to make business grow and bring jobs back. So, and he does fairly well in my district. Mm-hmm. But he does well in my district because he's voting exactly the way the majority of the people who voted for him ask him to do.
Before we talk about the general campaign, I do want to get your response as to some of the things your opponent said on the show, as well as through the air. One of the things that he's been really hammering home is that you've taken campaign donations from pharmaceutical companies and using that to say,
right.
well, you're not strong on the opioid situation.
And actually, let's look at how strong I am on the opioid situation. And understand the pharmaceutical company that he's talking about is no longer that pharmaceutical
company. And what pharmaceutical company was he talking about?
Yeah. Understand there's a lot of contributions that come in, and there's been times I've returned them. But this was not one that sent up a red flag. Oh, my gosh. But the reality is, too, it's not the contributions that I'm working for. I'm working for the people of the Illinois 12th. I'm working for my grandkids and the future of this nation. But let me also say this as far as more directed towards the comments of the opioids. 40 to 50 bills is what I voted for to deal with this opioid epidemic. And it is not anything new for Mike Boss to be working on trying to fix and cure problems of drug addiction and other issues out there. And when I say these bills that we dealt with, they dealt with education of our youth, education of our adults, education of our doctors not to overprescribe, and our dentists not to overprescribe. Systems that tie together across state lines to make sure when a person goes in to pick up something at a pharmacy, instantly, if it's in Missouri, you know that they went over to Illinois and got something over there, and to try to keep this calm down.
Prescription
monitoring. Yes. Sensible stuff, because we do see the epidemic. Because remember, if they get tied with that, then the cheaper was going to heroin, and then the heroin overdoses occur, and you're losing them. And let me tell you about this. The hearings we've had over the years, opioid addiction and heroin addiction as a substitute to the over-the-counter opioids is not something that affects any gender, any race, any financial status. It's everybody right now, and we've got to keep working on it. That's why we sponsored those bills. And so to say that I have all of a sudden, you know, taken money and not been aggressive after an issue, that is a little ridiculous.
And the other thing that he's attacking you on, in fact, a lot of Democrats are attacking Republicans on, is the health care mm-hmm. situation. He probably is pointing to the fact that there was a health care bill in 2017 that substantially curtailed the Affordable Care Act that you voted for.
You're right, I did.
And if it would have passed,
then we would have went to God bless him, McCain not voted no. It would have drove it to a conference committee report where you could do the process that is available in our United States Congress, where House and Senate come together and say, okay, if we got a problem with this, then let's adjust this. Or they have a problem with that, then let's adjust that. But what it did do, it provided for the markets to come down. And because it was not passed, what other things have been happening out there is that, because remember this, ACA was collapsing well before we started taking up to try to fix a healthcare system that could come back, bring the free market system back, allow for encouragement of the marketplace to grow so that the prices would come down. Let me tell you, I've said many a times that when they passed the ACA, their initial goal was not wrong. I want affordable, portable, and deal with pre-existing conditions. Matter of fact, I'm on the bills every time they come out to make sure that no one can be denied based on pre-existing conditions. But that's not what happened because of what happened at the time when the ACA was passed. If you remember, they couldn't go to a conference committee report either. Now, they could have, but what happened is then Senator Kennedy passed. And the power changed, and therefore they couldn't adjust the problems at all, and the system instantly started to collapse because the people started leaving the markets. So we've got to get back, we've got to sit down, and we've got to quit playing this partisan stuff that you're talking about on every ad. Believe me, I want affordable, portable health care that deals with pre-existing conditions, but I do not want a single-payer system. I want you to know that.
Now, you know, one of the things is that the Democrats have been saying is that actually the ACA wasn't doing that badly, but that the last couple of years since Trump, I mean, I'm just laying out. That,
you're not that, saying it, you're just repeating.
Right. Is that because the Congress, especially led by the House, has reduced the subsidies, done things that the insurance companies say have helped destabilize the markets as far as the marketplace where people could go and buy insurance. I'm just interested, A, in your response for that. B, what do you see as a counter to allowing people to go to some sort of electronic marketplace and buying insurance that their company doesn't provide it?
Okay, here's what we got. And we had this in the bill that we passed, okay? One, First off, let me tell you that politically, if you say something long enough, people will start to believe it's true.
Right,
and that's the market in which they're working. The reality is the bill that we had allowed for, if you're not in a company where you're actually, because it's basically calculating your risk pool. The larger the pool, the cheaper the price, because right. The risk for someone with a pre-existing condition can be spread out. Well, we worked on making sure that those risk pools could be, one, working with the state so you don't violate the 10th Amendment, okay? So the states could still have their own rules, and that's the tough part of it. But it was to move forward to allow for pooling across state lines and pooling in similar industry. What that would do is that if you're a small business owner, just by being a small business owner with less than so many employees, you could go together with a large number, reduce the overall rate, provide them a coverage, not only one coverage, but a list of coverages that you could make a choice from based on your real need. And that was what's the problem with the ACA is you couldn't really make those decisions based on your need. You were going to be asked to, and it's very difficult to get a young, healthy person to be involved with a system if it's so expensive. And let me tell you, because I was on the ACA for a while, what I ended up doing was I ended up paying a tremendous, my wife and I, because all of our children are out of the house, we ended up paying, we went from $500 to almost $2,000 a month, and we went from $25, $50, and $100 deductibles to a $5,000 cap or a $5,000 that we had threshold we had to meet. So we never even used the insurance the 2 years we had it because you could never meet that. But prior to the ACA, that was called catastrophic health care, and you could pick it up for about $160 a month. And so if the markets are open, if the pools are created, we can cure this problem. But we've got to quit playing politics with it and actually sit down and work together.
Now, one more thing that I want you to touch on before we have a final discussion about the campaign. One of the things that he has brought up in his ads, and I think you've actually kind of tweaked him on, is that he wouldn't vote for Nancy Pelosi to be Speaker of the House. You had an ad recently where you held up a phone, and I'm actually holding up a phone right now, and it's probably unnecessary because nobody can see it.
True.
But you basically said that Brendan Kelly has been doing the bidding of Nancy Pelosi and Mike Madigan for years, and he might say, well, I'm not going to vote for Nancy Pelosi to be Speaker. This isn't true. How would you respond to that?
I've spent my time in the state legislature in Illinois listening to many people say during campaigns that they wouldn't vote for Mike Madigan. How's that worked out for us? It's the same situation. You can say what you want, but the thing is, if you look at his campaign finances, he is receiving from Nancy Pelosi's group.
She's, DCCC, by the way.
And she's had two fundraisers for him in D.C. He was caught at that. Actually, what one week saying he wasn't going to support her, and the next week was at the fundraiser where she was putting it on. Now, you can say you're not going to, but the reality is you will, and if she is in the majority, because they will say she's the one that had it happen, they will put the votes together, and they'll lean on the ones they need to. Now, he personally may not vote. But they would put enough votes together to know that she would be the leader of the Democrat Party. And I've watched it. I know it. I've seen it.
Now, I mean, without taking sides on this, I mean, I know the Republicans have been pushing, you know, as far as demonizing her. Mm-hmm. What is, A, wrong with her? I mean, I'm just asking, so you can lay that out.
Two things. One, I've lived through and watched an impeachment proceeding done by the Republicans, which was not a good thing for this nation. And unless they have actual due cause for it, according to our Constitution, but she's already said, and her group have said, that if she becomes Speaker, the first procedure she will start is impeachment.
Of the president.
Of the president, right. The second issue is she said that she would raise taxes and get rid of our tax reductions, which I believe have caused the growth in economic growth and the rise in GDP and all the other benefits that we're seeing from that. That is the problem, and that her ideas are truly not the ideas of my district. There may be a few people in my district that believe with her ideas, but I can guarantee you, knowing my district as well as I do, that those are not the ideas of the Illinois 12.
Now, Paul Ryan, win or lose,
Paul Ryan's gone.
He's going to be gone as speaker regardless whether Republicans keep control or not. Is there any of the Republicans who have been talking about being his replacement? Which ones do you support and why?
Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy is a true leader, and somebody has asked, you know, the Freedom Caucus, and because of certain network television that's been pushing, they talked about Jim Jordan, and you know what, Jim's a nice guy, but the idea of the speaker is to be able to get people united, okay, because somehow you've got to come up with 218 votes, or more than that, on any bill that needs to move, and you've got to be able to work in a sensible way, not compromising, but finding ground, common ground. So Kevin McCarthy has done that a lot. Now, let me tell you, there were two that were up for consideration that I would have considered, and that's Steve Scalise and Kevin McCarthy. Steve Scalise has already said, I'll take the second spot, but I don't want the leader. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that's because of health reasons or, and I'm not going to make that judgment call. Let me tell you, they're both great people, and so's Jim Jordan. But Kevin McCarthy is who I would support.
Now, if you support McCarthy, what do you see as the philosophical or what issues would be pushed or not pushed?
We would continue with tax reform 202 or 2.0,
which is the next wave of tax cuts.
It actually makes the individual permanent. Let me tell you why that's important. You know, when people say, "Well, why didn't you make the individual cuts permanent?" Well, you can't because the Bureau of the Budget has to do on non-dynamic scoring. We knew that the economy was going to be stimulated, and if the economy would stimulate, then we could guarantee them they would be, but that's not just the only thing that's out there. There's been other little tweaks that we see that we can do. Besides that, we do need to be working together to come up with a cure for healthcare. That is an issue. I mean, it's a serious issue. So who's going to be able to unite them? If you take someone out of the Freedom Caucus, or you take someone out of the most far left out of the Democrat, trying to get that middle ground is almost impossible. So that's the importance of having a leader that can work with all people to try to come up with a common goal.
Sorry, we only have a couple minutes left, but I do want to talk about how high profile this race is getting. I'm not surprised.
Sure.
In 2014, when you were challenging Congressman Bill Enyart,
it was big.
It was a big race. It got a lot of national attention. You won. And I think people look at the district, say, you know, it voted for Donald Trump in 2016. It's out of reach for Democrats, but don't understand the historically Democratic nature of the area. And the other variable, too, is there's a governor's race where your nominee, Bruce Rauner, is supremely unpopular.
Right.
So with this in mind and the fact that both parties are clearly going to pour a lot of money to support each other, how do you win this race? And I'm also very interested to hear how the Rauner-Pritzker race is going to affect things, because I could see that being difficult for you potentially.
Right. And you know, Trump's numbers are fair in my district. Rauner's is not as good, but Pritzker is not much ahead of him either in that district. I mean, it's kind of a race to the bottom. I hate to say that, but the numbers they're just hitting each other. That being said, remember about 16, 18 years ago in the state of Illinois, we got rid of straight party voting. So that allows people the opportunity to truly come down, look at the ballot, and pick their person. Now let's look at the Illinois 12th and the numbers that it has. One, it is a district that, from the time I first started running, went from a D plus 4 to an R plus 4 in that short period of time.
And I just want to point out, the Democrats drew this district purposely to be a Democratic district.
They drew it purposely for Jerry Costello.
Yes.
Which was a conservative Democrat.
And I think they also drew it to make the surrounding districts more Democratic,
Republican. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, this is not like the Republicans drew this like in Missouri, but continue.
Right. And this district, like I said, Jerry Costello represented it and represented it well for years. He truly represented the district. But this district is turning more red as time goes on. And that has a lot to do with the development of housing for the St. Louis and Metro East area in the majority of St. Clair County. It has a lot to do with agriculture and their position. It also has to do with a lot of the Democrat National leaving the ideas of the older Democrats and what their ideas and principles were. Remember, this is a district that's pro-life, very strong Catholic and other faith, but pro-life. It is pro-Second Amendment, doesn't like big government, and by the time it's said and done, it is shifting. Now, also the other factor in here. Look, we're out, we're hitting the streets, we're knocking on doors, we're selling our message, we're making phone calls, we're doing what we're supposed to do. We will, obviously, there's ad campaigns that will go on over the next 58 days, or 48 days, let me clarify that. And then you also need to remember this. There's a factor in here. We have a Green Party opponent.
Yes, we do.
And the Green Party opponent in my district commonly takes 5 to 7%.
From
the Democrats.
Both are from the Democrats.
Almost certainly the Democrats.
From the Democrats.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And remember, it's a unique area because it's got Southern Illinois University, which is a very unique pocket in itself, and that's where the Green Party comes from. And remember, the Green Party was established in my district before they ever had the guy who ran twice against me, then ended up running for governor, and then established the Green Party by that.
In a race that could be decided within a couple points, that could actually make the difference between victory and defeat.
Yes.
I just want to thank you so much
thank
for joining.
Thank you for having me in. I appreciate it.
I think that this race requires more than just a 30-second soundbite, so I'm really glad we got both candidates on here.
Thank you.
If you haven't already, listen to them both. Be informed. For all of our stories, stlpublicradio.org. Follow me on Twitter, Jay Rosenbaum. Follow Joe on Twitter at
Jay Manis. That's J-M-A-N-N-I-E-S.
How can people follow you on Twitter or any other parts of the World Wide Web?
Bossforcongress.com.
Thank you very much. Until next time, so long.
There's a place off Ocean Avenue where I used to sit and talk with you. We were both 16 and it felt so right. Sleeping all day, staying up all night. Staying up all night. There's a place on the corner of Cherry Street. We would walk on the beach in our bare feet. We were both 18 and it felt
sponsored by Lou Fuse Alfa Romeo of Metro East.